This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. We often hear about special IEPs, individual education plans for primary and high school students, but what happens when they get to college? We'll talk today about programs for students who need extra support as they transition from high school to college. Joining me are Director of the Institute for Learning Differences at Thomas More College, Amy Osborne, Program Director at the University of Cincinnati Disability Services Office, Michael Southern, and Coordinator of Disability Services at Miami University's Hamilton Campus, Stephanie Dawson. Thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for having us.
I thought a good place to start was just to talk about some of the issues that students may be dealing with when they come to college and what types of things you work with. So why don't we start, Michael, how about start with you and just tell us a little bit about what's going on when students are coming in.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Mary. What we try to do now in post-secondary is get the word out to our secondary partners about students who are making the transition from secondary to post-secondary and how we can make some of those connections early on, perhaps in our sophomore, junior years of high school, so that those individuals will be aware of what we look for on the post-secondary level when they make the transition. I've done a couple of presentations in Chicago and locally to get information out to our friends in the trenches with us to share that once the students transition, we want to be able to offer them accommodations that will meet their needs on the post-secondary level and to make that as comfortable as possible so those students feel that they can continue their supports on the post-secondary level. So parents as well as students get as much information as we can. And so what we're doing now is trying to get to transition fairs, have an opportunity to engage these individuals early on so that when they make the leap, they know exactly what we look for in respect of documentation, what accommodations will look like, how in some cases modifications that we don't offer on the post-secondary level, how we won't offer those, but what can we do that would still support the student and let them know that their needs will be met on the post-secondary level. So getting information out early, an early information campaign is our focus right now in post-secondary.
Stephanie?
So there are some changes legally in terms of what laws cover students when they make the transition from high school and college. So that is one of the primary things that students are preparing for, which is to transition from the IDEA, Individuals with Disabilities in Education Act, and then make the transition over to Americans with Disabilities Act and then Section 504 of the Vocational Rehabilitation Act. And that law really that they're transitioning to under the ADA, students start to have a lot more independence in terms of managing their accommodations. They're responsible for seeking out services, for working with university support services and university professionals to determine accommodation plans and support services that are going to be necessary. So one of the major things that students are preparing for during transition is just really developing those self-advocacy skills so that they can take on some of those new opportunities in college to really lead the charge in terms of managing their accommodations and services.
Amy?
Yes, as it's been pointed out, self-advocacy is key to their transitional success. And research indicates that a lot of our students are still struggling with that transition. A lot of them haven't prepared early. And so our program, the Institute for Learning Differences, is set up to offer that intermediary step, give them the support they need in the transition, and let them learn to self-advocate. Depending on their specific needs, we're working to curtail a program specifically for that student.
You've all mentioned sort of being ready in advance and preparing the student as much as you can. What are some examples of things that you do to help prepare students as they're heading in from high school to college?
Well, as mentioned, right now is getting the word out. There is a national organization of disability services offices called AHEAD, Association on Higher Education and Disability, and they've put out some informational resources on their website that will allow our secondary friends to be aware of things that we look for on the post-secondary level of the transition for students with disabilities. And so what we try to do locally is we are often asked to participate in resource fairs, disability fairs, here in our community, and we jump on those opportunities as much as we can because we recognize for a lot of students it's a little scary, understanding what that looks like.
But what do you tell them at those fairs? I mean, when they come up to you and say, okay, what do you tell them?
Absolutely. Well, we want to, first of all, share with them that, we want to partner with you, that it's not a scary process. A lot of times the fear is really with parents. They're fearful that when they transition to the post-secondary level, their son or daughter will not be supported, and that's not the case. We definitely want to squelch those fears as early as we can and to share with them that this is something that we look forward to when your son or daughter transitions, and that we want to provide some information and resource for them. So we'll give informational talks. We will provide information to our secondary partners and let them know that when you are, you know, looking to transition to post-secondary, that we want to hear you. As my colleagues were saying, self-advocacy on the post-secondary level is paramount. And so we want to hear from the students. There is, there's been a push to help our students understand on the secondary level, when you're making the leap, that you are in control in respect of post-secondary laws, FERPA and other, that students are in the driver's seat. And they make the call when it comes to accommodations, whereby in the past, they've been kind of left alone, so to speak, from those conversations. I'm not saying that's across the board, but we definitely want to share with parents and students that it's a collective conversation with all of us, but the students really do make the call. What I've shared with parents and students now is that in the secondary area, students have been at the table but have kind of leaned back from the table. But now in the post-secondary level, we share with the parents that we want you to lean back and let the student lean forward so that the student has a voice at the table, because they are the ones that are going to be making those decisions regarding accommodations.
Amy, you mentioned a lot about self-advocacy, and certainly Michael's talking about that here. What are some of the things they can come in and ask for? What can they do? What accommodations are made?
So based on their documentation and the specific diagnosis, there's everything from additional time testing, scribes, so someone that can go in and take notes and assist in the process of gaining the information in the classroom, alternative formats of materials, so texts that are in large print. So it really is dependent upon the student's specific diagnosis as to what accommodations we offer.
Stephanie, do you think students are eager to take that on themselves coming out of high school, maybe when their parents were doing that for them in the past, or is it hard for them to sometimes step up and just advocate for themselves?
So you see diversity in the readiness of students to access services. Some students are very well prepared and eager to access those services. And then some students really rely on a high level of parental support as they're making the transition. So one of the things that we stress with prospective and incoming students is that Miami is going to offer really a comprehensive array of services to support you. And so we're going to provide whatever level of service the student needs based on their, you know, disability needs, and also based on their readiness to really self-advocate. So we provide the accommodation, some of the assistive technology that Amy just mentioned, text-to-speech software, speech-to-text software. But then we also make sure that students know they can access things like our TRIO student support services. We also have learning centers throughout all of our campuses and dedicated writing centers that can really just provide this wraparound support to the student. And then the student is really making connections with professionals in all of these offices. And so whatever their needs are, we're really going to collaborate and work as a team to make sure that the student has a smooth transition and learns how to really develop those self-advocacy skills.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, you also can send those to us on Facebook and Twitter. We did have a person with a question who wants to remain anonymous, who said her daughter is now in her mid-30s and she was strongly supported in college, but there still seems to be little acceptance or understanding of those with learning disabilities. And the caller said, what can be done so there is more acceptance of the students who need this help?
Well, I would say to that caller, one of the biggest things is definitely hearing from the student's perspective. As my colleagues were saying, every student has a story. And so we want to understand from that student's perspective what concerns they have. If they've had a poor experience, we definitely want to change the narrative for that student to let them know that depending on when you went to school, not necessarily where, but when you went to school, we want to make sure that you're aware of the new laws that exist that definitely speak to your needs and what we can do to support you and to hear your story, so that we can hope that from the accommodations that we offer, whether academic or in our residence hall community or other, that you feel that you've been supported. And so we want to have an opportunity where that individual could come in, meet with our staff, and then they can share their story. Something that we do at the University of Cincinnati, that when students are registering with our program, we give them a document called a student self-report. And that's that's an opportunity for the student to share their narrative so that we have an understanding, just a snapshot of their past experience receiving accommodations and or any concerns that we may want to address. If the student discloses in their student self-report that they have a need for additional counseling, we have a phenomenal counseling center on campus, our Counseling and Psychological Services Center, our CAPS, and they do a great job at partnering with our office and other offices to ensure that students who have mental health needs get that necessary help and assistance. So for that particular individual, just sitting down with them and just asking, you know, what concerns do you have and what any perceptions you may have that we can squelch so that you feel that you're being heard and supported.
With that, I'm sorry, did you want to add something, Stephanie?
So I'd like to thank the caller, the person for their question, because I think a really important piece is career services. And so our career services offices throughout the university really try to work with students with disabilities and to make sure that they're having a great experience in terms of, you know, career seeking, co-op, internship, placement. All of those services. But I think when I think about the age range that was referenced in the question, one of the things that I think we really want to look at is what do career services look like for students with disabilities? How are students being connected to various professional networks? And really looking at what we're doing there in terms of supporting students with disabilities, because they sort of have this nice nest, if you will, in the university, because we do emphasize inclusion. We do provide this great array of services and help the students obtain their education. But then it's really looking at how do we help them make that transition back to career? And then also maybe even thinking about things like focusing on disability culture. And if you have this culture of people with disabilities who are maybe tapped into professional networks, how can we really build this strong network so that students have that next stage of transition and have some additional supports there also?
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Yee's calling in from Clifton. Hi, Yee. What's your question?
I don't have a question. I just want to be on radio.
Okay. What did you want to talk about?
Well, I've been disabled since I was 16. I have bad genes on my mom's family. I'm related to Chairman Mao. Had a lot of problems, but I urge the voters to do research before going to UC or getting help, because the help is certainly there, but it's not enough for different illness or disability. I want a voter hearing this radio station do the research, compassion, and decision before, think through before vote. Get out, vote.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much, we appreciate your call. Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. I think he was referring not so much to voting as to students finding some background at the universities and doing their research to find out which university works best for them. I assume with UC and with Miami and with Thomas More, you all have opportunities there, but they may be slightly different, and some students may fit in better at one place than another. Amy?
Yes. So all universities are required to offer disability services. That's been a standing law for decades, federal regulation for decades and decades. But programs do vary. So the accommodations that we all have to offer through disability services are very similar, but all the additional supports outside of that can fluctuate some. So as a parent and student start looking at programs, it's best to consider what the structure of the IEP was, what they're looking at when they transition, what supports they had in place, how easy is disability services to seek out, how can they have those conversations with the supports that are offered through disability services, are there additional programmatic supports that are available, for instance, do they offer something similar to an IEP to help them transition in that piece, not only through the self-advocacy, but are they looking at how the student can learn to go through executive function support and issues that they may have had where they were struggling to plan activities and whatnot with their classes. So there's a variety of different supports, and it is excellent to reach out and do that research.
You all agree?
Yes, and I know that transition is an emphasis of today's segment, and one of the things, you know, if I wanted to give a suggestion to any parents and prospective college students out there is really take the time to visit different universities. And when you're doing campus visits, include the Student Disability Services Office. Include the learning assistance programs in that visit. Include any student support services programs that may be offered, such as the Institute for Learning Differences at Thomas More, and, you know, other various support services that may be offered. And then what you want to do is sit down with your support units, and really when you're making that comparison, you're also going to be including those services when you're stacking up the pros and cons and making sure that you're going to find the thing that fits best with you. You know, you want to look at things like, are there systems that make it easy for you to access and use services? You know, we have a case management system that we use with students with disabilities. We have various systems that we use for students to access tutoring services. So you're even looking down to those fine details of how do I access and use services, how accessible, how inclusive, what's the design of these services that I'm going to be seeking, and how do they fit with my needs.
Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. Mandy's calling. Hi, Mandy. What's your question?
Hi. The person who called remained anonymous. As a mother of a child with disabilities who is now in the middle school, but we think ahead towards transition, I feel like that person was asking more about the culture of the university itself and the typical student population. It's amazing that these resources exist, and it sounds like that there's a lot of really important components present, but how does this translate into the typical student population as far as raising awareness and changing the culture and views of the typical student population?
Michael?
That's a great question. Thank you for your call and your question. Something that we do at the University of Cincinnati is that we definitely want to immerse ourselves within the entire, you know, collegiate structure. I mean, we do not live on an island by ourselves. We are part of the collective at the university. And so we always partner with our campus faculty areas to ensure that we inform them of the need for the accommodations available within the academic community, but to also hear what concerns they have, because we recognize that we cannot do it independently. And so within our area, within Disability Services at the University of Cincinnati, we do faculty trainings. A member of my staff, Matthew Sauer, conducts trainings with each of our colleges, as well as I do trainings to ensure that the faculty are aware of our need for accommodation. And currently what we're doing on a university level is that we are definitely looking at the accessible platform, web, and other to ensure that online and web-based components of the university's existence is compatible with screen reading software, compatible with software that students with disabilities will need to have equal access to materials to ensure that 508 compliance on the federal level is maintained.
Mandy, is that answering your question?
It does. I think that by having the programs present, that's definitely something that raises awareness and that the students are integrated. But sometimes people come from different cultural backgrounds depending on where their hometown is when they're out-of-state students. I just think it's really important that it is an overarching belief or value or ethical code that is conveyed through the staff on the entire campus. Thank you for your answers.
Thanks so much, Mandy. We appreciate the call. I'm going to get to one other call before we run out of time. Patty is calling in from Anderson. Hi, Patty. What's your question?
Hi. My son is applying to the University of Cincinnati. However, we were kind of cautioned because of some of his disabilities, such as anxiety, a little ADHD and such, that it might be a little bit too overwhelming for him in terms of where he would live on campus in the tall high rises or however. So how would you guys make that feel like a smaller community? How do you do that in these, for example, the tall high rises and such, where he doesn't feel so overwhelmed and such?
Let Michael answer that before we run out of time.
No, absolutely. Thank you for your call and your question. I can share with you, Patty, that we definitely have students with those diagnoses on campus who are living in our residence hall community. We have a phenomenal relationship with our residence hall community. And so if a student shared with us that they had concerns about a particular hall, that it was you know, as you mentioned, that it was too tall for them, perhaps a high rise, we would work with our housing community to find a location that would accommodate that student's needs. We recognize that learning occurs in all places, definitely within the academic classroom, but learning also occurs in the residence hall community. And our residence education development office, they do phenomenal programs and do training with students to acclimate them to college. And we want all our students with disabilities that are included within the collective to be a part of that. So, again, it goes back to that conversation and that advocacy, and we want the student to share those concerns so we can address those so that he would feel comfortable.
Patty, thank you so much. We are just about out of time. I assume that you also have things that you can do at your in terms of residence halls and those sorts of things at Thomas More and
yes,
at Miami.
Absolutely. It's a collaborative effort.
We're out of time. Thank you
all
so
right,
much.
Thank
it goes
you
so quickly.
For having us.
We've been talking about the transition from high school to college. My guests today were director of the Institute for Learning Differences at Thomas More College, Amy Osborne, program director at the University of Cincinnati Disability Services Office, Michael Southern, and coordinator of disability services at Miami University's Hamilton campus, Stephanie Dawson. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier. Our assistant producer was Belinda Kai. Today's technical director was Dave Shermer. Archives of our program are available on our website, wvxu.org. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. Republicans and one Democrat serve on the Hamilton County Board of Commissioners, but power could shift to the Democrats in November. That change could have an impact on everything from transit to social services in the county. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we talk with Commission candidates Todd Portune and Andrew Pappas. We'll also get an update on the work of the Child Poverty Collaboration. That's Cincinnati Edition, tomorrow afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.